Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron in the studio. I've got Stephanie Philp. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. Morning, listeners. Morning, Raglan.
So, this segment we call Inside Your Minds, and that's not meant to be sinister. We're not going to get inside your mind. Today, we're going to talk about resilience.
Yeah, I was putting flyers up for the course I've got coming up on the 30th of October yesterday, and met somebody, and she said she listens to the segment, and I said, "Oh, what would you like me to talk about?" Because you know, sometimes we're going, "What should we talk about today?" And she said, "Resilience." So I went, "Oh, that's good. Yeah, let's do that then." So today, we're going to talk about resilience.
All right. So let's start at the beginning. What is resilience?
Yeah, well, I mean, we could look up dictionary definitions, but I don't know whether that's going to be particularly useful. But I think it's the ability to cope with what happens in life and learn from it and bounce back from the difficulties of life.
Yeah.
So that I don't kind of drag you down for too long. I might drag you down for a bit, but you have the ability to get over them, get through them, get, you know, some way and learn and move forward.
Can we compare it to the way the word resilience is used by like governments and councils, which is when a cyclone comes through, can the community cope? Can the infrastructure cope? Can we get back to normal life quickly?
Yeah, well, that's a community resilience, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it also depends on people in the community being resilient. So if everybody kind of throws their hands up in the air and goes, "Oh, we don't know what to do, we can't cope," then it's not a resilient community.
Yeah, yeah.
So community is made up of people.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And then also with communities is the resources that are available for them to be resilient and to overcome obstacles and hurdles, yeah.
Yeah, and that resources thing is probably crucial to personal resilience as well, what resources you have.
That's right.
Either financial or emotional, I guess, would you say?
Financial, physical, emotional.
Your health, yeah.
Mindset, yeah. Which, you know, is not really emotional, but emotional is one thing as well.
Yeah. So is it? So now have we got a definition? You're happy with?
I think most people agree with that. Most of that would cover resilience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And where do you go with it from there once you've got that?
So I think because we're talking about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, it's like what are the skills, tools, resources, if you like, that NLP offers to help people be more resilient. And so I think first up it's...
Did we say NLP?
Yeah, I said NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah,
you
want
me to do a definition?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. So neuro is the mind and
yes.
Body through which we processing incoming information all the time.
Yeah.
Through our five senses. Linguistic is language. So this is any kind of language, you know, how verbal language, written language, body language, anything that's conveying a message.
Yeah.
And then the programming is, you know, like how we've been programmed, how we do things. You know, we do a lot of the things on autopilot because we've learned programs to do those things. And then how do we change that if the programs aren't working for us, if we've been doing something for a long time and we go, why do I keep doing this, you know, and trying to change it. And often we try and change it consciously, which often demands a lot of willpower, and as soon as you don't have the willpower, things go back to how they were before. So so that's a really brief, really, really brief synopsis of what NLP is.
Yeah.
And so the...
And it's interesting because willpower is not something that I think isn't a resilient... Using your willpower is not going to help with your resilience.
No, it's because it's kind of... When we think about willpower, for me, I think about things that you kind of... something that you're forcing, you know, like you're forcing your will onto something, which is fine, but it's very draining over a period of time, and eventually you're going to get tired and then give up and go back to where you were before.
Yeah,
So those are the, you know, so willpower alone is not enough. Willpower can be useful in short bursts, but I don't think it's that useful over a long period of time. So I thought we could maybe talk about some of the things in NLP that help people to cope with change, because often adaptability to change is important in being resilient as well. Would that be something that'd be useful?
Yeah, I said that.
Okay, so I think the first thing is that people get improve self-awareness. So, you know, people think, oh, yeah, well, I think I'm aware, whatever. But I was reminded just last night when I was looking to put this together, what we were going to talk about today. Yeah. One of the guys that came on the course about 3 years ago, his first comment was, I learnt more in these 6 days than I have in 49 years of living.
Right.
Which is quite profound, you know.
Is that both a comment on your course and his 49 years?
Probably. You know, he's had an interesting kind of life, and he came on the course not even knowing what the course was. At morning tea time, he said to me, is this a counselling course or something? And I went, no, did you not read the brochure? And he goes, no, I didn't read the brochure. And I said, oh, well, how did you get it?
Yeah.
Well, he said, I asked my boss. I said to my boss, I want to change, but I don't know how to change.
Mm.
And his boss said, well, you need this course. So
he asked the right person then.
So he asked the right person. I don't know who the boss was. I'd never heard of the boss or even where he found out. Maybe I think it was his boss knew somebody that knew somebody that had been on a course.
Right, yep.
And at the end of it, it was a complete transformation for him. But a lot of it was about everybody's self-awareness, like becoming aware of your own thought patterns. Because I say we have 50 to 60,000 thoughts a day, and 95% of those are the same ones we had yesterday. That doesn't leave a lot of room for new thought patterns.
Mm.
And then are those patterns actually useful, and how do you spot those thought patterns? And then what's the impact of those thought patterns? So it could be that you've got some limiting beliefs about certain things that are stopping you from being so resilient. And so, having positive thought patterns, at times we probably do have negative thought patterns depending on what's happening in our life. But if we can go, oh, that's interesting that I'm thinking that, kind of taking an observer point of view on some of our thinking patterns, noticing them and then going, okay, what would be more useful to think, or what would be a more useful belief to have rather than that, you know? So... and all the way through the courses that I run, a lot of it is about self-awareness. Like, how come you're thinking that? Where did that come from? Sometimes people don't realise that their thinking patterns are negative. And yet one of the things that I do most often is helping people to change from negative thinking to positive thinking. Even something like yesterday, somebody sent me something to... look at a critique that they were going to put forward to a company to get some work. And it said, what did it say? Don't forget to contact me if you need some help.
Mm.
And so the problem with negative words like don't forget is that our mind, gets rid of the negative words. So you're left with forget to get in contact with me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I went, you know, what about saying, remember to contact me if you'd like some more information? That's a really, really simple thing. But if we're saying to ourselves, don't forget so-and-so, then we're forgetting them. And you go, oh, God, I just tell myself not to forget that. You've basically given a message to your unconscious to forget that.
The key word is forget. That's why you're unconscious.
Like the old don't drink and drive. You know, how many years did we have that going for, don't drink and drive?
Mm.
Did it do anything, any difference? Absolutely no difference whatsoever. Till they changed it to stay sober and be a legend or something.
Yeah. Simple message, stay sober. Especially the drunker you are, the less likely you are to be able to work out what that message really meant. Yeah, you really will be left with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one thing. And then kind of leading on from there, it's about effective communication. And my experience is that a lot of people, I know this is going to probably rub a few people up the wrong way.
Yeah.
They don't know how to communicate. So they know how to communicate when everything's going well.
Yeah.
But if their world turns to custard or something happens at work and they don't know how to deal with it. So then they either get resentful, you know, there's various ways people can handle it, like sulking, getting resentful, throwing things around, you know, getting angry. Often it involves everything except confronting the person or confronting the person in such a way that the person that they're confronting feels attacked.
Mm.
And so yes. learning some skills where you can, you know, have good rapport with people and talk to them and also listen is a really key thing, that people don't listen when they're upset about something. It's like people block their, when they're upset, they block their ears off, you know.
that thing of approaching people in a way that makes them feel attacked, it's like that's the only system that most of our culture has, the only method most of our culture has for dealing with conflict.
Yeah. And that's why people avoid it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And we don't have any. And I see it in weird places, like at the community board meetings. People come into. People are very aggressive and petulant at the same time toward council.
Yeah.
And they think they need to go in and give them a hard time. I'm going to go and tell them all about it, give them a hard time, and get them to change.
Yeah, and that doesn't work, does it?
Well, no, you're pissing people off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd hate to work for council.
Yeah, and then if people are pissed off, then you know, then they're not going to listen either because they're already pissed off.
No, and they're not even going to consciously prioritise you at the bottom of the list. They're just going to not want to even think about the fact that you came in and shouted them, and doing the task will remind you of them or them of you.
Yeah,
yeah. It is. The more you think about it, the more disastrous it seems. And yet, I worked in the building industry. That's how you got everything done in the building industry. Is you're really aggressive to everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's an article on the website because what I find is that people are conflict averse. They don't want to deal with conflict. They don't like
Because conflict. Of what I've just described. Yeah
exactly. And, you know, a lot of the work that I do with people is they go, oh, no, I just avoid conflict. And I go, well, the problem with avoiding it is that it doesn't go away. If you avoid conflict, it just stays in you. You know, there's an article on the website because it's quite long, and it's called How to Deal with Conflict Like a Hero, but without the blood and guts on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there's different ways, like there's examples, there's three case studies in there as well of people that avoided conflict and how they did. Like one, when you said the word conflict, he imagined a fist fight. In his mind, that was his image of conflict. Well, of course you're going to avoid conflict if you think it's going to end up in a fist fight.
Yeah.
Another one was a woman who, you know, would have an argument with her husband, and then she didn't think it had got resolved, and then she'd get all resentful, and then she'd, you know, keep it all bottled up until something else happened, and then everything had come out from the last 4 years, you know, and the husband, of course, was just overwhelmed with that. And then the third one was a woman who had been with the company for about 8 years or something, and then she found out that two people that had started after her and weren't as competent in the job were getting paid more.
Mm.
And so she decided that she was just going to leave. So again, avoiding the conflict by leaving and going somewhere else. You know.
How did it come out that they actually found this out? Did she?
Oh, just in a conversation, I think. You know, it wasn't... I can't remember what it was now. It was a long time ago. But the thing is with all three is that they hadn't learnt any skills to deal with conflict.
Mm.
And the other thing is that what you think is a conflict, somebody else might not even be aware of it, which then gets the person who thinks it's conflict, gets them even more wound up because they're going, why, they're just carrying on as normal, you know.
Yeah, and there's cultural different cultural norms about what is conflict and what isn't, and there's... I think here in New Zealand, we're particularly evasive of conflict. I know that communities in Southern Europe are happier to be blunt about stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't go down well here. Working class people are more happy to be blunt than other types of people in New Zealand, I think. Maybe I'm talking about building sites again.
I really think it comes down to whether they've learnt any skills to deal with conflict.
Yeah.
You know, so...
And I think that's people who go, okay, there's going to be conflict, let's go through it.
Let's push
our way through, which is, I guess, is one way, but you've got something better, I assume.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a whole range of skills in NLP that help, but one of them is reflective listening. Because when there's a conflict, often, as I said before, we kind of switch our ears off because we've got our own point of view and we don't want to listen to anybody else's point of view. And one of the things that we do on the course is have people discuss something that they disagree upon. So this could be, I don't know, I don't want to be political.
That's the first thing I thought of, especially with an election coming up.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so whoever is a fantastic prime minister, right? And so one person goes, no, I don't agree with that. And the other person goes, oh, yeah, I support that, right? So we go, okay, so we have them talk about it. So only one person can talk at a time.
Yeah.
And the other person has to, and they just say like two or three sentences about what they feel. The other person has to say back to them what they've heard, right? Using some of the person's language, if possible, if they can remember it. So only a few sentences at a time, because you can't process, you know, like half an hour's worth of being lambasted, right?
Yeah.
So, and then the other person reflects it back. And if it's accurate, then the first person can continue. If it's not, then they have to say it again till it's, because we put our own interpretation on what the other person said. And so then we're arguing across purposes. You know, that's not what they said. So you have to make sure that you've got an agreement. And the other thing that they have to do is they have to stay in rapport physically. So we've talked about this before. So when people are in rapport, we find that they kind of sit at the same in the same kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, that they might have the legs, like, you know, I've got my legs crossed under here, you've got your legs crossed there.
Oh, we have, actually. I didn't notice. I couldn't see feet, yeah.
And when we're not, then we have different body language. So they have to stay in physical rapport for the whole time.
Yeah. Right?
And so usually what happens after about 5 minutes, they're like, they actually settle down and they go, oh, actually, I can see that point of view, or I still disagree with you, but it's interesting to hear what you've got to say, because they actually hear what the other person's got to say, because that's the exercise. They have to listen, right?
Yeah, well, the purpose is not actually to resolve some political difference. The purpose is the exercise. That probably helps as well.
And get another point of view that might be different from theirs. And so, you know, so the reflective listening. And it's a real skill. I mean, it sounds really easy.
Easy to describe.
It's easy to describe, and it's simple, but it's not that easy to actually do it.
I'd love to see you get five people with different political persuasions, and they're very persuaded at the moment, everyone, in a room, and see. I'd like to see you work with them. That would be really interesting, just for my own amusement and education.
I was going to say amusement,
And education.
Actually,
no, the education bit is serious, because I'm at the point, I used to be very focused on politics, and I still am to a degree. But I think every time I read something about something political and I start getting annoyed, which I think is a really common thing, you either read something you like and you like that, or you read something you don't like and you get annoyed, I sort of think, as soon as I got to the bit where I'm annoyed, it's a waste of time proceeding any further.
Right.
And I think, how can we make decisions about the future of the country and things like that if we're doing it from a place where we're annoyed literally half the time, or probably more?
Yeah.
You know, and it's... So I don't have a solution to that except to stop,
right? Well, that's part of the
thing,
you see, is we tend to look for things to support what we already believe. So it kind of reinforces it. So if you change your belief about something, then your whole perception changes. So just, you know, without kind of going too far off the subject, the idea then is...
We're talking resilience, folks. That's what we're talking about. And how did we get to here? Resilience
is... We're talking about rapport building, you know, how when people are in rapport...
And dealing with conflict.
And dealing with conflict, if they listen, you know, and reflect back to make sure that they've understood what the person says rather than getting their own take on it, then the conversation can continue.
Yeah, because you said that if we feel some conflict but we don't deal with it, then we're still carrying the conflict within us.
Yeah.
That makes us less resilient because we're carrying.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, thank you. Tied it back.
And then the other thing that we do in the course is we have people find something that they agree on. So they might go, I don't know, dogs are wonderful, right? And so so the both dog owners, so they get together and they go, okay, this time you have to mismatch each other's body language, so you can't be in rapport physically, right?
Yeah.
And so you think that they talk forever on that, like, and I'll go, okay, you got 2 minutes, right? So they've got 5 minutes for disagreeing and 2 minutes for agreeing, and so they go, so the first person goes, oh yeah, dogs are great, aren't they? And the other person's like semi-turning away and going, yeah, I think dogs are wonderful. And then after about 30 seconds, they go, is it 2 minutes yet? Because when we're not in rapport, we can't hear. And there's nothing to discuss. Because you've got your own point of view. So the listening thing is a key part. It's a key part of actual rapport. So we think about physical rapport, but if you're mismatching, using different language to what the person's using, then it doesn't really matter whether you're in rapport or not. If you're using different language, then you've got a different interpretation. And so a lot of people have been taught to paraphrase. And so paraphrasing is, one of the developers of NLP said that's condescending. It's like saying, this is what I think you meant to say,
Yeah, or even that you got it wrong, here's how it is.
This is the way it should be.
an offhand summary.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's very important, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yet when we reflect back using some of the keywords that the person maybe puts emphasis on, that builds the rapport and it tells the person, yes, I've understood. So I'll carry on and say some more now.
Mm.
Or, yeah, you've understood. Okay, let's hear your point of view.
So you must use this in your own life. If you're in a situation where you have to go and talk to someone about something, some conflict, you'll be consciously getting into physical rapport.
Yes, but I think the thing is the skill is to be used not just for conflict because that's the problem. So if somebody learns reflective listening and how to...
There's some vacuuming. Somebody's vacuuming the foyer out there, the exterior foyer of the town hall.
Hit the wall.
Yeah, well, I think they hit the door.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they only use these skills when there's a conflict.
Yeah.
Then what happens is the other person goes, oh, yeah, that's great. You're doing that reflective listening shit now. But why didn't you do it last week before we had this conflict, right? If you did it all the time. So the idea is to use it all the time. So, like when your partner comes out, what's of the day you had? Oh, I had a fantastic day. We did this, this, and this. Okay. Oh, fantastic day. Okay, tell me some more. And so you're getting used to using it. Whereas if you only use it when there's a conflict, it becomes just another thing to be conflicted about with the other person.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So that's another thing. Lost my place now. What else?
Dealing with conflict.
Effective communication.
Is important for your own personal resilience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, because communication isn't just with other people, it's how do we communicate with ourselves? What are our thought processes and is that making us feel comfortable or is it hyping us up? Because, we're constantly talking to ourselves as well as other people.
So when you say hyping us up, like internal grumbling about somebody, for instance, as an example.
Or worrying about something, because...
Yeah.
Worry is just going to get you into a state of anxiety.
And then once you're there, then you worry about everything else as well. It's like all you can see is worries.
Yeah.
And that's not going to help with resilience.
And that's, again, that's another program that people could have going on that they may not be aware of, or if they're aware of it, they don't know how to change it.
Mm.
So, we deal with that on the courses as well. Then emotional regulation. So tools for managing and regulating your emotions. Being able to remain calm and composed when under pressure, that makes it easier to adapt to diversity. So we all know, in some situations where somebody's rushing around and, I'm showing my age a bit, but I think about Dad's Army where that guy used to rush around going, don't panic, and everybody be like, what?
And a panic for it. Yeah,
panicking,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, that's the last type of person you need in a stressful situation. So
when you're talking about emotional regulation, that's not using willpower in the moment to not freak out. That's practicing stuff, isn't it?
It's practicing skill. Well, there's a few ways. There's lots of different ways that you can do that in NLP. So one thing is to learn... it's kind of like trance language. So there's a I think it's a 7.5 minute thing on the website. Again, it's inside your mind, called the Calm Spot. So people can just go to there and call. It's called the Calm Spot, and all it is just me talking for 7.5 minutes
okay.
and helping people be calm. So it's kind of like people. It's like a bit like hypnosis, but it's like hypnosis light, right?
Yep.
So it's just helping people to calm down. So you can use this language to yourself to help you calm down. You can use a thing called an anchoring technique. So with anchoring, again, go to the website, search anchoring, is, you know, we've all felt confident in certain situations, or we might, or, you know, times where we felt really confident.
Yeah.
So we can re-access those times and anchor it by using a gesture. So I often recommend your thumb and middle finger of your non-dominant hand. And so,
like touching them together.
Your fingertip and your thumb tip. Yeah, thank you. And then, and anchor that state of confidence. And then, if you're in another situation where you're not feeling confident, you can make that gesture, and the feelings of confidence, which you've anchored, will come back. So it could be confidence. It could be calm. So people could go to the calm spot, and anchor a feeling of calm. And you could anchor several. Emotional states, if you like, on the same anchor, but, you know, make sure that they're similar. Like calm and peace could be anchored together, but you wouldn't want to anchor calm and excitement on the same one, because they just cancel each other out, right?
That would be,
You could use another gesture, or use your other hand or something, or another thumb and another finger to do it, you know. So as long as the gesture is not something that you'd normally use, and using your thumb and finger, it's something that people don't even need to see. You can just do it, you know, without people noticing.
Mm.
So that's quite useful. And so there's actually an anchoring technique. It's called how to anchor confidence, or any other useful state, or something like that. But if people go to the website and just put in anchoring, then I'll take them through the process so they can experience it for themselves. So again, if you're feeling not resilient, then what do you need to change? Do you need to change how you're talking to yourself? Do you need to be in a more, you know, resourceful state? Do you need to be calm? Do you need to be more upbeat? Do you need to be confident? What is it that's going to make you feel more resilient? That makes it a lot easier then to adapt to adversity and things that come up in your life that you're not expecting. Because that's the thing, is if life goes on and every day is the same, then first of all, there's no adversity there, and second of all, how do you cope with it when somebody throws a spanner in the wheel, you know?
Especially if all your habits are, when something like that goes, you go into a downward spiral of worrying and repeating your fears.
Yeah, if you go into that program where you just keep doing what you've always done, then you get what you always got. So
yeah.
Sometimes we need new ways of thinking and doing things to help change, you know? So then there's goal setting and motivation. So, you know, some people might know I've written a book about goal setting, and it's kind of a bit different from normal goal setting because it uses NLP techniques, and also it uses stuff on quantum physics, so that we help people to visualise what the goal is. So, you know, when you say visualise, people go, oh, yeah, I've got a picture of it, but the problem is with the word visualization, it implies that it's just what we would like to see. But actually, I call it sensualizing, because it's like using all your senses. So if you think about a goal that you want, okay, what's it going to look like? What's it going to feel like? Because it's the emotion that will help you get there, not necessarily the picture, but the picture helps you to get to the emotion. So what will you feel? What will you be saying to yourself?
Yeah.
So what will you see? What will you hear? So you might hear, I don't know, a big party going on if it's something, you know, that you really want to do. It might be peace and quiet. What will you hear? What will you feel? And sometimes it might be even what will you taste and smell? Depends on what the thinking. Like if you're thinking of opening a restaurant, there's going to be taste and smells involved,
clearly,
right?
Yeah.
And then finally, what will you be saying to yourself when you've got this goal? All of those things are really important to make it feel like it's real and it's something that you want, you know. And so I've got a book that's available around town called Goal Setting. It's been, I think I've had it about 4 years now, something like that.
I reckon longer, but anyway.
Pardon?
Probably longer. If you think four, it's probably six.
Okay, it might be. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true. I'll have to have a look. So setting and working towards goals will give people a sense of purpose and direction, which also contributes to resilience. The other thing with goal setting, so in the book I've got, you know, the way we think about goals, so there's the goal at one point and then there's where I am.
Yeah.
And then there's a straight line going up to the goal,
mm.
you know, and that's how we think about goals. I'm here now and here's the goal.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, it doesn't go like that. The line goes up and down and around and back again, and, you know, you're taking three steps forward and two steps back, and then you get to the goal. And that's how it really works. And all of those steps along the way are places that we need resilience.
Right, yep.
Because if everything just went in a straight line, you wouldn't get any resilience at all. It's the failures, or not even failures, because we don't even talk about failures in NLP. We just talk about feedback. It's that feedback and coping with the feedback and then moving forward that gives us the resilience.
Yeah, and that, like, and you mentioned before, like learning from, like, feedback. You learn from feedback, clearly. If we just see a failure as a failure and we don't learn anything from it, then we're going to repeat that experience and things will feel pretty hopeless pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If we're not adapting.
And
if we think we can't adapt.
Yeah, and failure is, if you think of something as being a failure, then that's kind of like a dead end. Like there's no coming back from it. You know, it's like, well, I failed or, you know, I've even been people saying, oh, I'm a failure. I'm going, well, you know, you're not a failure in a person. People aren't failures. What happens is we get feedback on something that didn't work. So we go, okay, that didn't work. What else can we do? And this applies also for me, like when I'm working with a client, if I do something with them and it doesn't work, I don't go, oh my God, I failed. You know, sorry, you'll have to leave now. okay, that didn't work. What else can I try? So it's having a toolbox of skills that are going to help you to be flexible. So flexible is one of the things for me that NLP teaches people is flexibility. So not to get knocked back by something that you might have determined as a failure, but to go, okay, that didn't work. That's feedback. Okay, what can I do differently? Because the definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
So you've got to have other ways of resolving conflict, getting around through feedback, and that's something that's learned.
Yeah.
So what else? Did you have a question?
Tools for Resilience. Well, I don't know if we've talked about a book by Johan Hari called Stolen Focus, which is about not just social media but the effect of devices and the internet on our attention.
All right.
And on our capacity to just to problem solve. Everyone understands now about the dopamine hit that social media gives you and the internet gives you.
Mm.
I feel personally like overwhelmed by the amount of information. Like you keep getting drawn into stuff and you get given more information and it's just, and especially in my job, it's all information flowing.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to tie this in. So you're talking about in resilience there, the ability to think things through and adapt and change. Mm. And part of what, the way our focus has been stolen is our ability to think things through over a long period of time. We're used to short thoughts now, but not long thinking. And so that, aside from the fact that we're just plain overwhelmed by all the stimulation we're getting, also now there's a lot less long thinking going on, which you need, like you've described, to work through things and to build your resilience.
Yeah, exactly.
So things may be worse at the moment because of that?
Yeah. I think you're right. So this idea of, it's kind of like short-term thinking that you're talking about. Not short-term thinking, but short span of attention.
Short span of attention, yeah.
And, you know, on the course, usually at the start, I talk about how distracted we are. So there's a part of the brain, which I can't remember the name of it now, but what happens is if we're focused on something, like say we're driving along in a car, you know, maybe we've got people in the car and we're all having a sing song And then somebody suddenly pulls out in front of you. You know, what happens? You don't carry on singing. You jam your foot on the brake. You stop singing and everything's focused, you know, on stopping immediately. And so then after that, you start up again and, you know, let's say you're carrying on. You get back into your singing or joking or whatever. And then let's say a cyclist pulls out. And so, again, you jam your foot on the brake. And then, you know, now this part of your brain, which will come to me in a minute probably, it kind of stays open because it's like, okay, well, we've had two things now that have drawn our attention away from driving. I wonder what the next thing's going to be. So we often talked about things happening in threes, you know, or whatever. So now we're hypervigilant about, you know, really being focused on that. So that's driving. So let's take an example where you're at home, say, or you're working and you're focused on something. And then your phone dings or pings or whatever the hell it does, right?
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, somebody's messaged me or something. So then your attention is diverted to your phone. And so you check that and do that and then you get back to it. Now, to get back into it, it takes quite a long time. It can take between 2 minutes and 20 minutes depending on how long you've been distracted by your phone. So then you get back into doing what you were doing and then it pings again. Okay, and then this time, then you're like, oh, okay, they've replied. So now your attention is on your phone and not on what you were doing in the first place.
Yeah.
And so then what happens is by the end of the day, you've got to play catch up with all the work that you haven't got through because you've been attending to your phone. And your phone becomes the center of attention and the work is like secondary.
Yeah.
And it takes, and it's not, you know, like on courses, I ask people to turn the phone off because it's not just if their phone dings. If their phone dings, it upsets everybody in the room.
They all, their attention switches. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Some people will take, you know, like a minute, 2 minutes to get back into it. Some, it might be 20 minutes. So, you know, and it could be the phone, it could be, I don't know, what else is going on. It could be a message come on the computer, it could be anything. So if you really want to focus, learn to focus again, because we never had these things in the past. You know, our grandparents didn't have phones dinging all the time. They just sit there and do whatever they needed to do. So so that is a real cause of probably lack of adaptability, because we're all over the place.
And this book I was talking about, Stolen Focus, talks about how, like, those notifications, like all that stuff is designed and engineered to keep your attention on the device. Some of the best minds on the planet have been devoted to keeping our attention on our devices.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a fair fight.
No.
Like, we think we lack the willpower to put our phone down, but we don't realize how much effort has gone into manipulating us into keeping on the phone.
That's right.
Yeah, and keeping looking at ads, basically.
I was going to say, and keeping looking at ads as well.
Yeah, which is the purpose. Yeah.
So what else have we got? So
turn your notifications off as much as you can, I would say.
Yeah, or put it on airplane mode while you're doing some work.
Yeah.
Or turn it face down or something like that, or leave it in another room or
and then people might think, but what if something important is coming?
Yeah. I always think that if something important's coming, then you'll find out soon, one way or another.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not talking about doing it for days.
Yeah.
Because
just
generally
for the morning
we can,
or a couple of hours.
Focus for about 90 minutes. I was going to say 90 seconds, 90 minutes.
So now it's 90 seconds.
Yeah, it might be 90. Yeah. And for some people it might not be, 90 minutes because they've not been used to focusing for 90 minutes. I know sometimes people on courses struggle. We go about 90 minutes between... You know, like when we start morning tea, for example, but there's other things happening in that time because people can't focus for 90 minutes. And they really struggle with the phones, you know, often, as they used to being able to pick them up. So what else? So the other thing with NLP is helps people be cope with change effectively.
Yeah. This is what we said right at the start.
Yeah, because, you know, people go, oh, I don't really like change. But, you know, every cell in our body is constantly changing. That's as people, all we are is change.
Okay, all right.
So, but then we resist change. I don't know why. I really like change. I don't like it to be constant. But most people will accept change as it evolves. Some people thrive on constant change. you know, other people that don't want any change, and they're the ones that will struggle with resilience when they do have, when change is forced upon them, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very busy here, isn't it?
It is. People come in and go. I think someone wanted to clean in here. They're welcome to after we finish the interview.
Then stress reduction. So NLP includes, you know, relaxation and stress management techniques. We've talked about that a bit before. Anchoring, visualization. I do quite a bit with the regulating the heart rate variability through breathing and stuff like that. And then confidence building. You know, if you've got more confidence, then you're more likely to be able to adapt to and be more resilient than if you haven't got any confidence and self-esteem.
Just generally a positive outlook, which is a lot of the things could be come under the heading of positive outlook, is going to help.
Yeah.
And but it's hard to magic that up. You don't just decide to be positive.
It is interesting because I created a belief, and I think I've mentioned it before on here, and that belief is that everything happens for the best.
Mm.
So, you know, in the last few months, a lot of things in my life have turned to custard. Then I go, everything happens for the best. Sometimes you can't see what that is immediately.
Yeah.
But with that belief, I'll go, I wonder what the outcome will be that'll be better. And then, you know, going backwards, because you can only connect the dots going backwards, I can go, oh, yeah, well, if, you know, that hadn't happened. So for me, that's a really useful tool, if you like, belief to put on, like putting a pair of specs on.
Yeah.
To go, okay, well, I'm going to look for whatever the positive thing is in this, because everything happens for the best. So, you know, other people don't have to believe it, but I've found it useful for me.
I think one thing it does is that it means you can see, like, if you believe nothing good's going to come out of the present circumstances, you can't even see the potentially good things that are coming.
No.
Whereas I know that you're going to see the good thing, the good solutions that might appear on the horizon.
Yeah, it's kind of like the difference between, you know, if you believe nothing good can come out, it's like being focused on that piece of paper that you've got there and nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a piece of paper in front of Aaron, right? And whereas thinking, you know, everything happens for the best, it's kind of like expanding your horizon to the whole room and outside and going, okay, well, you know, what are the potentials that could come out of this that are positive? But if I'm just focused on that piece of paper, that's in front of
me. You can't see anything else.
I can't see anything else.
Yeah,
exactly. And
if you're just focused on your problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're coming close to the end of the hour, Stephanie. Are we?
That's cool.
How long is your list?
I think we've probably covered most things. I think probably just coping strategies. And we've kind of talked about some of those, like visualization, anchoring techniques, being mindful, staying present and focused in the moment, which is what we just talked about really with that, you know, not having your phone turned on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then learning from adversity and the conflict resolution, which we've already kind of talked about. So there's so many things, and it's not like you just learn one, but they all kind of link together.
Yeah.
You know, and that is what makes people more flexible and gives people adaptability and resilience over time, you know, because I just see people being so much more resilient at the end of even a 6-day course than at the start.
And so have you got a course coming up?
Yeah,
talking about how wonderful they are.
Yeah, that's right. So I've got one, The Power of Personal Change, which is 6 days, starts on the 30th of October to the 4th of November.
Okay.
The Papahua Conference Centre over at the Hui Room. The Hui Room, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, over at Papahui. So, and people are welcome to come on that. I've put some flyers around, but if they go to the website insideyourmind.com, under training, they'll see all the information there. There's flyers around town, but I can't put on an A4 flyer everything that happens in 6 days. Even on the website, I can't put that unless I put the whole course up. So, but there's lots of testimonials from people as well that have done the course and what they think of it. So people could relate to some of those, I think.
Okay, and also you mentioned articles that you've written or resources.
Yeah, so there's one on conflict resolution called How to Handle Conflict Like a Hero, but Without the Blood and Guts on the Floor. There's The Calm Spot, which has helped people just chill out for 7.5 minutes. There's a couple on anchoring. I put that in, and there's one about anchoring where I take people through an anchoring process. But there's about 60-something articles on there, so I'm sure people will find something that's useful for them.
Right, there's InsideYourMind.com.
And sign up for the newsletter, so you get my newsletters and you get a free thing that teaches you how to be more resilient.
Yeah. That's what we want. All right. Yeah. And listen to the podcast if you tuned in halfway through to find out how we started.
Yeah.
And previous podcasts too on RaglanRadio.com.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.